Hello and welcome to another edition of the Best of Mornings with Matt White right here on 1170 SEN. On Monday, Greg Alexander joined us in studio to recap a thrilling week one of finals, including the Rabbitohs' upset win over the Penrith Panthers.
Time for the Monday Means Test with Greg Alexander.
Thanks to UPIN Property, dream it, find it, UPIN it. Good morning, Brandy. A dramatic morning of sport, a dramatic start to the finals as well.
Absolutely, Matty. It was a fantastic weekend of footy. Physical, exciting, absorbing games. That was after Friday night's disappointment. I was let down by Manly's performance on Friday night. They were never a chance. 15 minutes into the game, it was 16-0. And you're not going to run the Storm down. When you allow the Storm to jump out of the blocks like Manly did, you're no chance. And that's exactly how it played out. We spoke about before that game finals experience, and Melbourne, of course, are chock full of finals experience, and you don't know whether that sometimes plays a part or not, or whether it's hard to pinpoint whether just how important finals experience is. But gee, that's how it looked. The Manly side, the lack of experience, it was deer in the headlights stuff from Manly. They had a try scored against them in the second minute and never recovered, Matty. It was very disappointing. The three games after that, wow, they couldn't have been better.
Yeah, we're going to break them down match by match, but I want to get your opinion on some of those leading questions that I just posed there to our listeners, Brandy. So let's start with the grand finalists. I know it's early days in the finals, but if we're locking in Melbourne, well, I'm prepared to lock in Melbourne. So A, are you prepared to do that? And then B, which other team is most likely to be there?
Well, if I was locking in Melbourne, that means I would be giving up on my team. So I'm not prepared to lock in Melbourne. And I know a lot of people will after Penrith's performance against South Sydney and just how good Melbourne were against Manly. So the fact that the Panthers were beaten by South throws them onto the other side of the draw. So they'll have to get through Melbourne in a prelim final. It's not the grand final most were thinking, but... Matty, I'm not prepared to lock in Melbourne because I'm not prepared to give up on Penrith just yet.
See, I tried to snook you there. You're too smart for me. I thought after a long, busy weekend that I could get you on the first one, but just like your playing days, mate, you've stepped beautifully around that one and gone straight through the gap. Who disappointed you the most then in week one of the finals? Of the six that are left, is there anyone you're prepared to put a line through to say they can't do it?
Look, I guess if I'm prepared to put lines through teams... And I'm not necessarily putting lines through teams that lost on the weekend. With Penrith on that side of the draw, the Melbourne side of the draw now, that leaves Manly, the Roosters and South Sydney on the other side. Now, I don't know really who to put a line through out of that. I think that side of the draw is so open. You know, the Roosters and Manly, I'm not prepared to give up on Manly, Matt. You know, they were beaten comfortably by the Storm, but I'm not prepared to give up on Manly making the grand final because I think on their day, Manly could beat the Roosters and they could beat South Sydney. But then South's performance was, for mine, the best performance over the weekend. They did change what they've been doing through the regular season because they defended like I haven't seen South defend. The pressure that they put on Penrith was extraordinary. So on that side of the draw, so I'm your questions to me, Matty, I'm not going to answer them because Penrith is still alive. I'm not saying that Melbourne are a definite to make the grand final. And on the other side of the draw, it is really open.
Which is interesting when you go back to think about when Latrell was ruled out, plenty were prepared to put a line through South Sydney and say they couldn't do it.
Yeah, I was one. I said South can't win the comp without Latrell. And I wondered whether they could get to the grand final without Latrell. But they showed us something different. And, you know, we always talk about the finals being a different competition. It's very hard to wipe the slate clean as to what you have done for the 25 rounds leading into the finals. But South produced something above and beyond, I think, what they showed in the regular season. South's defence was good at times through the season, but it was found wanting a lot of times. And a lot of times, South found themselves in trouble against sides well below them on the ladder where they had trouble defending errors. Whereas on on Saturday night, they had no trouble. Their energy and the pressure they put on Penrith forced Penrith to play the way they did.
So I've had two throws and two strikes at the moment. You're just stepping back from the plate,
so
just playing it beautifully.
So just about the sides that disappointed, it's a toss of the coin between Manly and Penrith. They were the disappointing teams out of the weekend. Manly, for the reasons that we've just spoken about, just not there. And Penrith will go into a little bit more detail, but yeah, disappointing.
You're right. So there's probably two parts of that question. Disappointed, yes. Prepared to put a line through, no. What did you make of Wayne Bennett versus Ivan Cleary? Good theatre, or are you a bit over it?
No, good theatre. Like I it's always interesting hearing coaches. Ivan after the loss to Souths. You know, that's a tough press conference. Penrith were favourites. Everyone's been talking about Penrith being in a grand final, you know, with a loss to Souths, all of a sudden there's question marks hanging over that. They're going to have to go the hard way. So I can understand Ivan's emotions after a loss, and you know whether you want to have an honesty session after a game. Well, that's up to Ivan. He almost said it at the start. He before he started talking, he said, "This probably isn't the forum." And then he went on to release what he was thinking. And it probably wasn't the forum. But he fell into the trap and he kept going. And he kept digging. But I didn't mind it. I thought, you know, well, here's a bloke just being honest. He's telling us what he's thinking and what he was thinking prior to the game. I agree with both coaches. And Wayne Bennett, when he got on, he said, well, you know, I didn't open it up. It's Ivan started it. And I myself don't even know who started it. But what Wayne did agree with Ivan was that are coaches and should coaches be allowed to comment on what the referees should be doing prior to a game publicly? And I think both coaches agreed that they shouldn't. So I thought it was good chat, Matty. In the end, that sort of chat doesn't mean anything to what happens on the field, but it does add a bit of theatre to it.
Yeah, good theatre. I'm prepared to put it in the good theatre box as well. Was the penalty try the right call in Rockhampton at the end of the match yesterday and just around the point of whether or not Clint Gutherson actually dropped the ball or kicked the ball?
So your problem is whether Gutho got his foot to the ball before it hit the ground, not the decision in the end whether Pennacini scores the try or not. It was so close that Gutho either kicked the ball or made a touch on it just before it hit the ground or whether it hit the ground first. I couldn't tell. They slowed it down, and I was happy to say that it was a horrible kick. He was in a very awkward position to put a kick in. He actually blew a try-scoring moment for them because they'd created the space on the edge. If he passes it to Pennacini scores the try. So Gutho, in his haste, I think, got his foot to the ball, and I couldn't prove that it hit the ground before he got his foot to the ball. And after that, I thought the decision for a penalty try was pretty obvious. I went with it. I called the game with Warren Smith yesterday, and Pennacini was tackled from behind. The ball sat up beautifully for him to gather it. Now, we'll never know whether he's going to drop it or gather it, but I think in the minds of the referees that if the tackle wasn't, if he wasn't taken out prior to having a go at the ball, well, he scores the try. So in the end, it was a controversial way to finish the game. They were 2 points in front at that stage, the Eels, Matty, and, you know, who knows what would have happened if they had have gone the other way, but I was comfortable with the penalty try.
I thought that Gutherson sort of gave it a little bit away because after he's had a crack at it with his right foot, you can see that he's trying to then kick it along with his left foot, which to me says that he knew he didn't get it. But in the end, it could fall into that drop kick thing, and we'll go into that a little bit later on. Just before the break, a quick call from Gary, who's given us a buzz about Manly this morning. Gary?
Hi, Matt. Yeah, Manly. Look, the way I see Manly is Foran's has seen better days. And the best position for him is hook at the moment. I look at Manly this way. I don't think they're mentally strong enough in the forwards. I don't think they're physically enough good enough to go back-to-back games, physical games, and win. You stop Tommy and you stop Schuster, they're out of business. They're finished. And when it comes to Penrith, Greg, you've got to play Parramatta physical game. Then you've got to play Melbourne a physical game. You'll be punch drunk grand final day. I'm not saying you can't make the grand final, but you won't be winning it. You'll be punch drunk.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, that's it. You're losing on Friday night. And, you know, we talk about the importance of having that second chance, but sometimes the second chance doesn't matter. And there hasn't been many occasions where teams have lost week one and then gone on to win the finals. The Cowboys, I think, in 15 did that. And you can go back a few years before that where another team did it, but it's rare that a team loses week one. That's why week one's so important. Even if you've got the second chance, sometimes that second chance doesn't count that much. But, Manly were showing up to be a bit of a one-trick pony once they shut. But they shut the team down, which then in effect, shut Tom down. Tom had nothing to play off the back of. There was no go forward, but I think Manly can turn that around. I really do think that the Storm are a different kettle of fish to try and beat the Storm. But I think Manly has still got the game enough to beat the Roosters and then possibly, you know, roll South Sydney the following week.
Plenty of texts coming through around South Sydney, around Ivan Cleary, around the surface at Townsville. 0457 736 736. We'll get to those, your questions for Brandy. We will break it down game by game. We're giving the finals the Monday means test.
Tuesday, we counted down the greatest TV sporting moments after we got a stack of texts.
Welcome back. It is 26 minutes after 10 o'clock on the morning show here on 1170 SEN. And wherever you're listening via the SEN app, the NFL season, as we know, is underway. So we've got Las Vegas Raiders versus the Ravens this morning. That'll be starting pretty soon, if it hasn't just started. Laurie Horish from ESPN will be joining us to bring us up to speed with what's happening in the NFL. But we're talking some great sporting TV moments. So not the ones where you're at the ground, but when you're sitting there in the lounge room, you remember that amazing moment that popped in your head. Chris from Cronulla's given us a call on the open line. Good morning, Chris. What do you remember the most?
It was probably about 25, 27 years ago, sitting in a lounge room watching Michael Bevan hit a four off the last ball in a one-day test match against West Indies. I think he hit it straight past Harper, it might have been. And I just remember wishing how great the atmosphere would have been there, but it was just as electrifying at home with all the mates sitting around watching that four off the last ball.
Yeah, I remember that. I was actually at the ground, Chris, believe it or not. So I remember when that happened. He hit the four off the last ball, so that was the 1995-96, and it was the fifth match against the Windies. And if I'm right, I think he broke a couple of bats along the way to get there.
He did. I remember it flying past, almost hit the wicketkeeper in the head, one of them.
And yeah.
one of those moments where, you know, you're 25 years on or even longer now, you still look back at it and still sort of get the goosebumps and remember exactly where you were in the lounge room and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that was awesome. Good on you, Chris. Thanks for the memories. Yeah, that was a while ago now, but one of those incredible, incredible images. And Chris is right. You know, 25 years later, somebody says, what's your best sporting moment on TV? Like, weirdly enough, that 4x100 freestyle relay came up for me and the Smash 'Em Like Guitars. It was just extraordinary. I was jealous that I wasn't there that day. A mate of mine was. And I remember he called me from the stadium saying that this is out of control. And I thought, I don't know if it could get any better than even watching it on the TV. But we've got some great sporting memories to think about. Chris Go from Willoughby says, the best sporting TV is the epic last phase of the Bathurst 1000. There have been some epic finishes. Thank you for that, Chris Go. Obviously, I was lucky enough to be in the commentary box for quite a few of those with my old mate Neil Crompton. You're right, there's something very, very extraordinary about the closing stages of the Bathurst 1000, the last 20 laps or so, because you know that it's just not going to peter out. That's the thing. Even sitting there in the comms box, Chris Go, I can tell you that there'd be so many times where throughout the course of 161 laps, you're talking 6.5 hours racing or a little bit shorter, but there'd be times when we'd look at each other and go, this thing's about to take off, isn't it? This is about to go into next level. And normally you're saying that as we get to the final stages. Martin says, I was very lucky to be at Cathy Freeman's 400 metres in Sydney. You were lucky, Martin. But my favourite TV sporting moment was the Socceroos beating Japan in the 2006 World Cup. I shared that with my 14-year-old son. The next day, a very good friend of his at school told him that he went to bed at the 80th minute. He felt the Socceroos were never going to score. So funny but tough for him. Tim Cahill's legend began that night. Thank you, Martin. That's another one for me. I was there. I was over there covering that one. But let's go back to when they qualified for the World Cup. There's a TV sporting moment. Who wasn't around that TV if you weren't lucky enough to be out at the stadium that night as the Aussies booked their berth? Cuppy says, Australia winning the America's Cup. 100%, Cuppy. Good call. That takes us a while back. And some famous sporting TV moments afterwards when Bob Hawke donned that garish jacket and declared that anyone who fired, what was it? Anyone who fired their workers for not turning up today was a bum. So some great sporting moments. Let's keep them coming. We'll build a top five out of this, but we need to break for the 10:30 news. Yeah, can't wait for that. We're hoping that Tim Payne gets through the surgery that he's having today on that sore neck, a chronic neck injury. So the idea is that Payne gets it done early. He'll have enough time to recover, then get back into training and should be okay for when the Ashes start on December 8. Looking forward to being part of the Ashes team right here on SEN. Cannot wait for that. Talk about great sporting memorable moments. I think we'll get a few out of that one. So 0457 736 736. You're giving us some great memories here on the text line. Pommy Rabbitoh, 2015 NRL All Queensland GF. JT kicking the field goal in Golden Point. Watching that one on the box. Duckman says, I think one of the best TV sports moments was Scotty Sattler's cover tackle in the 2003 grand final. Yep, good call on that, Duckman. Mark says, best race on TV, Pamela Anderson racing the other lifeguard on the Baywatch beach. Thank you, Mark. I knew you'd come up with something for us. And some others here, just checking on the crowd capacities for the Bevan moment. Steve Waugh, Century, and Cathy Freeman. Dead set must have been 10 million in every stadium. Everyone you talk to says that they were there. Well, what was it? 80-odd thousand, close to. Cathy Freeman, I can't remember what the capacity was in Sydney 2000. It was up towards 100. Well, I think it was 100,000, wasn't it? Because we also had a rugby test match there, which remains the highest number. Parko says, my moment is Usain 9.58. Unbelievable. Obviously, you're watching that, Parko, on the telly. You weren't there for that one. Martin says, I was lucky to be at Homebush in 2005 November when we qualified. I had to tell the old bloke behind me how the penalty shootout was going. He couldn't watch. 2 a.m. Tommy, some of your memories of great sporting moments that pop out on the TV.
Yeah, so more recently, I mentioned it briefly yesterday, but I'm going to go with Saturday's game, and I'm a bit biased here, but Roosters v Titans. Like that, I'm being like dead serious. That final moment.
You are?
Yeah, that final moment. I was watching it with my older brother. That final moment of Bo Firma, as a Roosters fan, Bo Firma making that break, and then they shift right, 1 point down, and then Patrick Herbert. I thought that was exhilarating. That was thrilling. But looking back, probably 2014 State of Origin Series Game 2.
Yeah.
I was watching it at home with my family where New South Wales broke the 8-year drought over Queensland in that 4-0 win only off the back of a Trent Hockenson try. That was, I mean, to be at that match, that would be unreal, 80,000 fans there. But just to watch it at home with my family, that was still, you could still feel the electricity in the air. It was a great win and great moment on TV.
Yeah, isn't it crazy how you can remember where you were and when you were watching it? Mitch from Robertson says, Steve Waugh at the SCG, hitting the four off the last ball to bring up his 100 against the Poms, made it even better. Thank you for Mitch. That's an interesting one for me, Mitch. I was on a plane when that happened. In fact, two great sporting moments, now that I think about it, have happened whilst I've been on a plane. That was one, and I was coming back from Perth, so from WA to Sydney, and I remember that was before you had internet, obviously, on the plane, and I remember having to get to the baggage carousel to find out what had happened, and that's when we found out that Steve Waugh had hit that four off the last ball. The other one was when Adam Scott won the Masters. We were coming back from New Zealand after covering supercars there. Mark Barretta and myself were on the plane, and I remember Barretta telling me as soon as we landed, he'd managed to get some sort of signal off his phone, and we could not believe it. We were in the Qantas Club early in Auckland watching the final round, and they called the plane, and it was like, no, we don't want to go. So there you go. Two big sporting moments that I missed. Didn't catch them. Have obviously seen them since, but keep them coming. We're getting so many texts on the text line, 0457 736 736. Paramat says, Matt, who had the AFL booked for their grand final pre-game entertainment besides wheeling out the guy to belt out up there, Kazala, yet again? Birds of Tokyo, I think, are going to perform at the AFL grand final. They've performed at the after-match entertainment before. So Birds of Tokyo, I think you can lock in. In terms of the NRL entertainment, I don't think we've been given that yet. That Cathy Freeman gold medal, yeah, there are 112,524 fans at Stadium Australia. 112,000 people there to witness an incredible moment. I was covering the Sydney 2000 games, but I actually did have a ticket to that, believe it or not, and gave it to somebody else. So I ended up with watching that on the TV. So that was right up there with one of the great TV sporting moments and probably one of the most nerve-wracking as well. Keep them coming. 0457 736 736. The NFL, as we know, is underway. We'll catch up with ESPN's Laurie Horish after this.
Time now for an AFL wrap with Sam Edmund.
Before we do that, Sammy Edmund, you've surely got a great TV sporting moment that jumps out at us.
Hi, Matty. Good to be with you. I've only got to say one word and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about for my greatest sporting moment that I've witnessed on the small screen. Uruguay, November 15, 2005. Seriously, what a powerful moment that was when John Aloisi struck that decisive penalty and ran topless for what seemed like 5Ks. That was just an amazing night.
On the text line, some more beauties coming in. 2015, One Day International Cricket World Cup, Australia v NZ at Eden Park in the group stage. The Aussies only make 150 and look gone. Mitchell Starc took 6 wickets and almost stole victory, but New Zealand won by 1 wicket. Most incredible game of cricket I've seen. In a TV sporting memory sense, Steve from Narellan. Matt, question, do you think the AFL would have changed it for the NRL? I don't think so. Answer, Steve, no, they wouldn't have. And as we go to the break on this one, what about this? Stephen Bradbury. Who can forget it? Stephen Bradbury's gold medal performance.
But this race is by no means over. It's the Korean Ahn first. Ono skating in second position. The Chinese competitor Lee third. Now Ono makes his move. Listen to the roar. Has he gone too wide? He comes back inside. A lap and a half. Can Ono bring it home?
It's going to be very hard to pass Apollo Ono once this guy gets to the lead. He's almost impossible to pass. Skates a great track. Holds the corners tight. But the Chinese skater on the outside, oh, and it's a lot of contact, oh, they've all gone down, Bradbury is going to come through and win gold, Stephen Bradbury from the tail of the field, Stephen Bradbury has won gold, Stephen Bradbury into Australian sporting folklore, our first Olympic Winter Games gold medal.
Thank you, Adam. 28 minutes to midday on this Tuesday. Jared Waitley with High Noon and, of course, Afternoons with Jimmy Smith to be followed by The Drive Show. Joel and Fletch driving you home. That's your lineup throughout the week here on 1170 SEN. We've been reliving some great TV sporting moments. When you're sitting in the lounge room, you remember the incredible images that were coming through. This one from Bulldog Bob says, as a Bulldog supporter, the 1998 prelim final against the Eels. With 10 minutes left, Parramatta lead 18-6 before the Dogs come back to win with Halligan nailing the sideline conversions. I was also privileged to be at the 2000 Olympics opening ceremony. Not a TV moment, but wow. Gee, that's a good ticket that you had there, Bob, at the opening ceremony of the 2000 Games. Dan says, Craig Lowndes, when he flipped and flipped and flipped and flipped. Don't remember what year it was or which track, but it was bloody unreal, Dan. That was Calder Park, mate, 1999. It was not too far off the start line, if you remember And they were about four or five wide just coming over the rise there at the old Calder Park, and Lounsey got squeezed out. He shot across to the left-hand side of the track. I'm trying to remember it as I go. And then he just started the roll and ended up pretty much perched on top of the Armco barrier there. Dan, you think it was bloody unreal. Believe me, Craig Lowndes did not at the time. That was as scary as it got. But as they all came around and saw what had happened to Craig, most of the drivers pulled over and stopped and went running to make sure that he was okay. So running towards the upturned car, just sitting there on its lid, halfway up the barrier. And one of the funny stories is that Lowndes tells that some of them were there to try and help him get out, make sure he's okay. Most of them were there to see what was underneath the car and if they could get any intel on the actual car itself. But that's a good memory. Dan, thankfully, he came out of that okay. Did you end up seeing the images of Lewis Hamilton with the Red Bull car on his head yesterday? I spoke to you about them yesterday and they were flooded throughout the news and newspapers this morning. It's as scary as you're going to see. The intense weight of that car basically perched millimetres above Lewis's head, and only the halo stopped him. That would have been a horrible, horrible outcome. Here's a memory. 1999 UEFA Champions League final. Teddy Sheringham and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer score two gold in the 3 minutes of added time to secure Manchester United the famous and only treble in English football history. A lot of good memories from the Premier League throughout the year, getting up nice and early. I can't remember who used to show it on free-to-air, but it was great to catch a game. When Craig Johnson was over there at Liverpool, I remember getting up nice and early. Here's Grant from Balmain. Thanks for this, Grant. Three great sporting moments for me. The men's 4x1 freestyle relay at the Sydney Olympics. That's one that I earmarked for you, mate. That was a beauty. Smash them like guitars. And what Ian Thorpe did in that final leg was off the planet. A 1991 Rugby World Cup quarterfinal. Ireland versus Australia. I remember this well. At Lansdowne Road, Gordon Hamilton had scored to the delirium of the Irish crowd and put the Irish in front. Michael Liner, Noddy, scored in the corner in the final minutes to crush Irish dreams. You remember that well, where he darted across to the right-hand side, I'm going to say at Lansdowne Road, Grant, and just got the ball down in the corner, and that was it, an incredible finish. And also, Grant says, in Rugby League, Australia v England, second test, thinking 92 over in England. The Poms were playing much better than us, having also won the first test. Ricky Stewart broke free in the final minutes and ran the length of the field to offload to Big Mal to crash over for a win. I remember that, and if my memory serves me correctly, Grant, Mal Meninga, remember he had the arm guard on at that stage around that time? And I'm sure that he, what would you call it now? It'd be almost like an escort. He took one of the Pommy players well and truly out on that run down towards the try line. But it's another great memory. Storm Boy has chipped in with this 1999 NRL Grand Final in their second year in the comp. Melbourne Storm. Good on you, Storm Boy. Thank you. So plenty of texts coming through. Have we got a top five out of that? I'll have to get 2 a.m. Tommy to work with that. Perhaps the digital team will put it up and we'll post it on our socials. The top five of the great sporting moments. Still got a fair bit of time together, so keep them coming if you've got any. 0457 736 736. Great to hear yours, great to hear others, and great to relive some wonderful sporting memories. Back after this. Martin on the text line says, no more texts from people remembering the Storm winning the 99 Grand Final. Not good for Dragons fans like me. Sadly, I was there. On what should have been a great day, he says. How about TV heartbreak memories? Or are they best forgotten? Maybe we could do that tomorrow. Maybe we could go the heartbreaking parts. We've gone the uplifting today. Is it time that we get down and dirty tomorrow? So we've come up with a bit of a top five. We're starting to find some non-negotiables, I think, from that. So I've called in 2 a.m. Tommy into the studio here to try and break it down. A lot of these, I don't think you were born yet, 2 a.m. but no. You certainly know what they are and what happened. So can I throw a couple of non-negotiables I think that need to be in our top five? And I'm starting to wonder whether we probably need a top 10. The reaction from our listeners today was extraordinary.
Been great.
You. Yeah. Thanks to everybody who's chipped in. It's always good to go down memory lane. Okay, so here's some non-negotiables I think that we've got to put in there. John Aloisi's goal to get us into the World Cup. That's a bit of a no-brainer. Cathy Freeman, of course, Sydney 2000. Warney's ball of the century. So there's three non-negotiables. I think, too, the America's Cup victory in 1983 needs to go in there. And there's a very compelling case for Stephen Bradbury to be in there. But that's a top five.
See, the thing is that when you have these conversations about greatest TV sporting moments and then greatest Aussie sporting moments, you need to distinct them. So Stephen Bradbury is a great Aussie TV sporting moment and TV explicitly because not a lot of Aussies were there. Rather than with Cathy Freeman, like we had a text to say before, how many people have you met that said, oh yeah, I was at Cathy Freeman's one? You know what I mean? So that you can kind of distinct it there. Or how many people say, I was at John at that 2005 World Cup qualifier. So that's what makes the Stephen Bradbury one probably even greater than Cathy or John Aloisi, because you kind of, you only had to watch it on TV. No, not a lot of Aussies were there in person watching it. Now, I said to you in the break in regards to the America's Cup, and I am probably showing my age here, do people remember more the actual America's Cup win or Bob Hawke's famous interview that he did after? What's more memorable? And what do you think of first when you think of that America's Cup win?
When I think of it, I think of the win. And I think of Bondi and Ben Lexan, and there's a whole stack of images with them standing there going, rise, rise for Australia too. And up the yacht comes and shows us the winged keel. So I hear what you're saying about Bob Hawke, but that's probably gone into folklore a little bit later on. That was on the Today Show, I think it was. But yeah, look, mate, everybody was up that morning to watch Australia 2 win the America's Cup. Hadn't happened before, and I'd still put that in my top five. So maybe we need a top 10, which is interesting because we've got all these huge, huge events. But out of those that we've just touched on, nothing rugby league.
No rugby league. And so when we spoke about this, I said there's three probably sporting, like three rugby league moments on TV that stand out for me particular. And the first one that came to mind was Darren Albert, 1990. Even I wasn't even alive for this. But like just watching, I've seen the replay over and over and over again. Probably that try.
So have I.
This, another one I wasn't even alive for, Mark Coyne. Just that try on Origin, just because of Rabs's commentary, and you know, just I don't know, that makes it iconic, especially hearing his voice. But then another one, I remember watching this at home when I was back in year 11. Jonathan Thurston's field goal, 2015 grand final. That whole sequence, Kyle Felt try into Thurston missing the sideline conversion into golden point and him kicking the field goal. That whole 5 to 10 minute sequence was just crazy. So yeah, if there's any rugby league ones, shoot them through, because we haven't had a lot of that. Like you said, we haven't had a lot of rugby league nominations. They've been more broader national sporting Olympic moments.
Yeah, oh, there's been quite a few league nominations, just all different ones. I mean, the call of the 1989 grand final, Canberra v Balmain.
Yes,
that was a rip snorter, and that was incredible to watch. Here's one from the Chook Man. He says, the Super League tri-series final that went 80 minutes, then 10 each way extra time. Alfie Langer then suggested to toss a coin, but Golden Point was played. And in the 104th minute, Goldthorpe kicks a field goal for a 23-22 win. So that was in the Super League tri-series that went the distance. Michael Phelps and the 2008 Freak Show, that was his haul. The eight medals there for that one. Thank you for that, Dan. I was actually there. I was there for one of his gold medals, but I can't remember which one it was.
You just keep rubbing it in, Matty. Whenever someone sends in a text, you go, oh yeah, I happen to be at that sporting event, actually.
Well,
I got to see it live.
I mean, yeah, it's what you call, thankfully, an occupational hazard.
Yes.
It's not bad at all. In fact, well, can I make you feel somewhat better?
Yeah.
Yes, I was there. I was working on Seven's coverage at the time. It was an amazing couple of weeks. But you don't get to see sporting events as much as people think. You actually go to them, you don't get to see them. I happened to jag a ticket to that one through a mate, and I had enough time to go over there and watch that one. Did that make you feel any better, or am I just sounding more like a dickhead?
A little bit.
Don't answer that one. So I think what we should do, I reckon what we need to do is work on a top 10 overnight.
Yeah.
We'll continue this discussion on our social platform as well, because we've got some great contenders here. And maybe we need to whittle it down to a top 5, if not a top 3, tomorrow. Do we really want to go down the heartbreak?
I think we've got to, yeah, for continuity's sake, and we've got to show, you know, we're an impartial show here. We've got to show the heartbreak as well as the, you know, the triumph. Triumphs and tribulations here on Mornings with Matt White. But also, I think a man that will be able to help us. When I was walking in the studio, Jimmy Smith says, oh, I've got a couple of nominations as well up my sleeve. So I think he'll be able to help us before the show ends today.
Well, that's exactly what we need. We need some assistance. All right, so let's take a break. We'll donate some time to having a chat. Well, not donate. We'll open up some time to having a chat with Jimmy. But keep the text coming. So, oh, here's one. Just jumped in. Cliffy Young, the marathon man, the great marathon runner down to Melbourne. His run down to Melbourne, you don't even remember that one, but his TV, that was a TV moment for sure. And I remember the images of doing the Cliffy shuffle as he's heading on down the highway, and wow, that was incredible. What about a rugby league TV moment for this one? King Wally versus Mark Geyer. Yes,
yeah,
that has to go up to the very top. So we've got plenty coming in. Keep them coming. 0457 736 736. We'll catch up with Jimmy Smith soon.
Wednesday, the Sydney Morning Herald's Andrew Webster joined Manny to discuss the controversy surrounding Sam Verrill's suspension and how to fix the NRL judiciary.
The judiciary, don't worry about them being former players. The judiciary is under instruction from the NRL because of the crackdown on head highs earlier in this year. And that crackdown has been all over the place. They've drifted in and out of when players are put on report, drifted in and out of when they're penalised, drifted in and out of when they're sin binned or sent from the field, and then drifted in and out of what it means at the match review committee. So as a consequence, there is so much confusion on every level of the game about what constitutes a careless, reckless, intentional, head-high tackle. And that's where I think you talk about blowing things up. I think they need to get on the same bloody page about what's on what warrants what sort of punishment. The thing is, and everyone appreciates this, rugby league is messy. No two tackles are the same. Some are similar, but no two tackles are the same. But there needs to be some consistency around the way that they make judgments on whether players are taking the field or not. Because as it stands and as it looks to me and many others, the game is looking for reasons to ban players from not playing. And to me, that is just insanity. It's like they're coming up for reasons for players not to take the field. And the last time I looked, the game was all about the players on the field, not about the officials off it trying to come up with reasons to ban them.
Well, if you're a broadcaster, go back to your point about asking for more money for a new team up there in Brisbane. If you're a broadcaster, you want to ensure that the biggest stars, the main players, are on the field as much as possible. So if you can't guarantee that as a game and it's all over the shop, that's just one piece of the pie.
Yeah.
It's got a big outcome in terms of money, but it's a tiny piece of the puzzle.
I wouldn't mind if Verrills was received a grade one. I think that's fair enough. Like there's inconsequential contact like that. We've got no time to pull out of a tackle, but you know, sometimes that's going to happen. Sometimes a player's going to reach out and coat-hanger someone just on instinct. That's just going to happen. But there's a difference between intentionally trying to hurt somebody and one that happens in a high impact game, and particularly a game at the moment that's as fast as it is. And I just think there needs to be just some parity across the board about what, you know, when players should be penalised, sent from the bin, sent from the field, sin binned, and then rubbed out. Because I just think there is so much, it's been so vague about when players are missing games or not. And I just don't think that's healthy for the competition.
You're right. It's been all over the place since Magic Round in particular. We need to take the 9:30 news. We can take your calls. Plenty of texts on the text line. Andrew Webster is with me, the chief sports writer at the Sydney Morning Herald.
And on Thursday, Fox League commentator Steve Blocker-Roach rang in to preview week 2 of the NRL finals and discuss the greatest prop forwards he's ever seen.
Welcome back. So the countdown is on. Tomorrow night, week two of the finals begin. You can feel the finals on Fox League. Watch every game leading up to the grand final live and ad break free. Available on Foxtel and KO, of course. And this man will be right in the thick of it. I always love catching up with rugby league legend Stephen Blocker Roach. Good morning, Blocker.
Matty, how are you, mate? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you. How good's finals footy, mate? I don't want to sound like Scott Morrison, but gee, week one was awesome, and it's a bit mouthwatering, the two matches that we've got this week.
Yeah, I thought the interesting thing last week was that the South Sydney side turned the premiership on their head. Look, I've got to put my hand up. I thought that it would be the Melbourne Storm and Penrith playing in the grand final again. That can't happen now. If Penrith win this week, they'll match the Storm in the game to go to the grand final. So, mate, it's turned it on its head. I really love sitting back and watching last week. I thought after the first game when the Melbourne Storm put the Seagulls to the sword, we might see a few lopsided scores, but that wasn't the case.
When you talk about the South Sydney turning it on its head, you're absolutely right, Blocker, and a lot of people didn't see this coming for good reason with Latrell gone, an entirely different team. How much do you then put that down to the Wayne Bennett effect?
Well, Matty, you've heard of horse whisperers before. I've talked about this before. Wayne Bennett, he must be the human whisperer. Mate, unbelievably. You can't do this for over 30 years and it being a fluke. He's a genius at getting these players up. Latrell Factor, you're 100% right. A lot of people would have said, oh, he can't win without Latrell. He's their gun. But, mate, all of a sudden they just find someone and they march up. And look, I thought their forward pack last week were absolutely outstanding. I've been waiting for Big Burgess with a performance like that for a long, long time. I know he's a solid player and plays to a standard week in and week out. But mate, he was outstanding. He just took him on along with Jai Arrow, and all of a sudden these guys have got the week off. They can sit back, put their feet up, and look forward to the one I'm looking forward to on the weekend is the Battle of the West. I can't wait to see these big boppers go at it for the first 15 minutes. You look at the likes of Paulo and Campbell Gillard up against Pangai and Harris, those sort of guys. It's going to be a bolter. I reckon everyone should get their beer ready and their hot dog and sit down 5 minutes before the game and get themselves set.
Yeah, it was incredible how the intensity level goes up in finals footy, and forwards come to the fore. I'll talk to them about that in just a sec, but you've been at the biggest stage. You've been in State of Origin. You played in your finals. You played in grand finals. I want to know from a player's point of view, what sort of changes around what the coach is starting to tell you? Because how much does it go away from game plan and go away into what's in the mindset? Because finals footy is very different to anything else.
Yeah, it is, certainly. Look, I thought, just in saying that, mindsets and all that sort of stuff, I thought for me the perfect example last week was Mitchell Moses. The game was going to and fro, a little bit of an arm wrestle, and all of a sudden, 20 minutes into the game, he just clicked into running the ball. So it takes a special player to understand at what stage of the game is needed. And I thought that was a great example for me last week. The thing about it, Matt, is experience and playing in those big games. Although, we lost two grand finals in a row in 88 and 89, but we played in big test matches and big origin matches and just getting yourself set. And I think understanding how to get yourself set, because, a lot of people wouldn't realise that, the game, they realise that the game's on at 8 o'clock at night, but the difficulty in being able to prepare yourself when you wake up in the morning and you've still got, you've still got like 10 hours until the game. So you've got to learn how to pace yourself through that day so you're actually ready when you actually play the game. Because a lot of young kids come in and they play their first game and they're that excited that they actually play the big game before it actually happens, in their heads. So I think experience is a big thing. I just look at the mental state now of the Penrith Panthers, who have been outstanding for the last 2 years and got beaten the grand final last year. And I thought, they were a bit overawed last year. And then all of a sudden, first semi-final this year, they get beat. Now, the pressure is really on them. But I think blokes like Nathan Cleary eat up that sort of pressure. And I'm looking forward to seeing how the Panthers respond. A lot of people are saying, oh, mate, if they don't respond this time, maybe they're the easy beat of the league come big games. I disagree with that. I think you're going to see the real Penrith stand up in what, as I said, was the Battle of the West. You know, the Parramatta side have proven this year that they are ready. You know, it's taken them a while to get there, a few years, to get to that stage. And now they beat the Melbourne Storm twice this year. So they go into this game knowing that they can win a big one. But in saying that, I just think, you know, Cleary can get them home, the Panthers.
So let's talk about that one first then, Block. Panthers v Eels, and you touched on this. I said there at the start, and you just touched on, a lot of the focus will be on the sevens in this game. In the first game, a lot of focus will be on the ones because we've got some of the best going around that the game has seen. Yeah. So let's talk about the forwards up there in the engine room where you get down and dirty, and who needs to step up from the Penrith side, from the Parramatta side? What do the forwards need to do here to get their team across the line?
Well, this is a battle for the ages, this one. you know, it all comes down to mistakes. I'll just go back quickly to last week's game, the Storm and Manly, right? They go into the game, everyone's confident about winning. Manly make a mistake in their own half in the first set of six. They scoop it up, they score. You imagine what that does to you mentally. So it's all about getting out there and completing and getting your first, you know, seven, eight, nine sets away. And once you get off to that sort of good start, and, you know, halves can sit back and watch those forwards go at it and, you know, pick the game to pieces by the time these guys are really going at each other. But, mate, there's not a split match between these two packs. But when you look at Cleary and the way that he, you know, he might have been shut down a little bit last week and didn't have the greatest of gains. But the great players, that doesn't happen to him again. And, mate, he certainly is a great player. And I just think that, as well as Moses played last week for Parramatta, I just think Cleary's just got that little bit more to his game. So, you know, look, we're going to level each other out. There's no doubt about it. That's what I said. Mm. You know, get there early, get your seat and get your drink and get ready for it, because I reckon the first 15 minutes. When you look at these guys, you know, a lot of people see them on the field and you're watching from afar. Mate, these guys are 115, 120 kilos.
Yeah.
So you've got to imagine it's like a car crash. The contact, and you know, it's just being in the right place at the right time and understanding and playing well at the right time of the year. So, you know, they'll be Parramatta will be buoyed about what they did last week, but it was against Newcastle, who I thought struggled to get into the eight, and they just tipped their way in. My only problem with Parramatta last week is that they leaked a lot of points. So I think Penrith will pick up on that, and Penrith will be filthy on what happened last week against South Sydney, and I just think they might get the money. I don't think it'd be that much in it, but I think at the end of the day, in the clutch moments, I think Penrith can do it.
All right, I'll put you down for the Panthers. Who gets home between Manly and the Roosters?
I think Manly. Look, I've got to sit back and admire what the Roosters have done. You know, it's well documented. You know, lost Boyd Cordner and Friend and all those guys and all the injuries and Morris and those sort of guys, and they've all the injuries they've battled during the year. It's that next man up sort of mentality for the Roosters. But they've lost their dummy half again now, Verrills, to a 2-week suspension, which I thought was pretty harsh. I thought it was a harsh suspension. But anyway, that's the way it goes now. You can't hit blokes in the head with any part of your body, so he gets 2 weeks. And I think that's a big loss, because out of the dummy half, he touches the ball more than anyone else on the field. So you've got to have that slickness, but not only the slickness with the passing out of dummy half, you've got to have that understanding with your halves. And, you know, I think it's hard just to throw a bloke straight in a big game. Manly will be filthy what happened to him last week. That won't happen to them again. They're a good side. So I think Manly will get the... I think Manly will get the chocolates over the Roosters. So Seagulls and Penrith to go through next week.
All right, mate. Hey, we've just been throwing it out there to our listeners this morning, trying to piece together the best pack that we've ever seen. So can I get a nomination from you of the best prop who you'd put in your leading pack?
What that I've ever seen?
That you've seen.
Oh, Arthur Beetson. By the length of the straight. Because he had everything, mate. He was tough. He could, if you wanted to go and rumble, he could get out of the gutter with you. But he could also had a beautiful soft hands. He could play. He could play football, mate. Arthur Beetson was a great player. But mate, when you look at the modern game, mate, I can't go past Sivan Asiva. Sivan Asiva,
yep,
probably doesn't get the raps that he did. Mate, he played 46 tests for Australia in the front row. So for mine, I mean, I've seen a million of them. I respect all of them because I know what it's like, mate, playing up there in the middle, and you know, there's no place for the faint-hearted. But for mine, I'd say Arthur Beach is number one, and then Simon Receiver. But you know what? I was only sorry for going on, Matt, but we're talking That's about front right. rowers now. I was only saying the other day, mate, that Jarrod Rua Hargreaves. I sit back and I look at like the best front rowers of all time, and sit back and look at those sort of packs. Now, mate, he's done it for a decade or over a decade. Won 3 grand finals and mate plays tough every week, week in and week out. And it's been unreal for the Roosters this year when they lost all their players. He stood up. So, mate, I'd love to give him a mention too. But if you're asking me the modern day player, I would say Petro Sivanasita.
Yeah, good on you, mate. Gee, very hard to argue with all of those. Artie, of course, number one. Petro, there's a name that I actually didn't think of, and I'm guaranteeing that our listeners will fire up on that one. And then JWH as well, a special mention for him, who is an absolute warrior. Mate, it's great to catch up. Great to get your thoughts on week two of the finals. You're right, get there early, get your position on the lounge. Can't wait to watch it. Have a good weekend, Block.
Good on you, mate. Good to talk to you, Matt. See you, mate.
You too. There he is, Stephen Blocker-Roach. You can catch it all, of course, on Fox League. A little bit late for the news. Let's get there now.
Thanks for listening to another edition of The Best of Mornings with Matt White. We'll be back Monday morning from 9 a.m. for the main sess with Greg, Brandy, Alexander.